we're very conditioned to understand that if I want to all of a sudden learn to walk a 5K or run a marathon, that I have to take these small, steady steps forward. But we don't necessarily approach ego development, which is what the Enneagram helps with, in the same sort of way. And that's where I love interchanging consciousness practices and behavior change theory with the Enneagram, because it sort of slows it down and makes it smaller. If I want to run a marathon, so to speak, in terms of my ego development, right? I want to be like all of these types. I have to make it small enough that I can experience these sort of permanent shifts.
The big question is this. In a world of fake Instagram models and fad diets, how do real people achieve their fitness goals? We are an army of hardworking women changing their lives through fitness and health. Wherever you are at on your journey, we have the answers to how to make working out and eating well a part of your life. Join us in changing the dialogue for women everywhere. Welcome to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Rachel. Take two.
We have a special guest on today, and I want to make sure I tell you guys all about her correctly. Erin Bauti is our guest on today, and she's been studying and working in the field of behavior change for over 20 years, and she uses the Enneagram consciousness practices and behavior change theory to help individuals, couples, leaders, and teams in both life and at work.
So I know you.
Yes.
With your background.
I don't know you.
Who are you? I know you, and I know your background in behavior therapy, and I know you are so freaking excited
for this guest.
Because it's like you're like chomping at the bit.
No, I really am. Behavior therapy is like my thing.
Let's go.
But she has a bachelor's degree in human development and a master of public health, and is finishing her PhD in industrial and organizational psychology with a focus in coaching and development. So freaking cool. But she's been studying the Enneagram for 11 years as a tool to get clear about behavior patterns that align with individuals' relationship and team success.
She was doing Enneagram before it was cool.
Yes. And we're going to talk about that. So Erin, welcome.
Thank you for having me and for such a lovely introduction. I got hyped big time.
Yeah, we got to tell the people how amazing you are and how well versed you are in the Enneagram, because it has picked up steam probably in the last 3-5 years ish. It's really picked up some steam.
Yeah, and I'm grateful for that, because when I first started working with the tool, I'd been doing leadership development and business strategy for a long time, and I had used tools like the DISC assessment and Myers-Briggs. And
I use the DISC too. Yeah. I was trying to remember what the name of it was. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I first found the Enneagram and got certified, I would work with teams and they'd be like, the Ennea what? Like, how do you say this? What is this? I have a lot less of that now. So I definitely appreciate the popularity. It's made my job a little bit easier. But like with anything, you know, there's some downsides with gaining popularity in that we sort of distill and dilute and all of that. So I love being able to talk about it so that we can sort of push in and create the depth so that it does go with us in all of the facets of our life. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited because I just think that personal development is just like the most important thing that you could possibly do. And it's like this ongoing, the more tools that you have for like self-awareness, I just think the more successful that you generally can be in your life, because I just think like it's just the key to really finding your true purpose and you're getting after your dreams and goals is just like knowing who you are and what makes you tick. And that's why I love the Enneagram so much, because I think it really makes it, it's not easy for people, but I think it makes it easily digestible for people to kind of see where they might fall. Why don't you get started in telling us about like, okay, give us a basic beginner's guide to what is the Enneagram and how would someone go about finding their Enneagram type?
That's a really great place to start. And I love how you're framing it, because I think the Enneagram makes sort of self-discovery and self-knowing accessible, because it sort of creates language around not what I do, right? These other behavioral models, like the DISC assessment or Myers-Briggs, just tell me what I do, right? They sort of illuminate behavior, which is helpful. But all that does is tell me how adaptable I am in any sort of context, right? So people are like, well, I'm different at work than I am at home, or I'm different with my family than I am with my partner, or whatever that might look like. And all that shows us is that we are sort of in the human condition, and we learn how to be in different places, where the Enneagram tells me also why I do what I do. And in the why is when I can resource it. I can help create tools that allow me to evolve, because we're humans, we're going to. And so we eventually outgrow our personal development strategies. And the Enneagram allows us to sort of grow with new strategies because we take that language with it. So that's what I love about it, is deepens our knowing in this really, really cool way. And starting to sort of identify can be really hard, because if I'm sort of used to just looking at what I do, right? Like take a construct like people pleasing, right? We often think everybody who people pleases must be a type two on the Enneagram, which we call like the helper or the giver. And we sort of forget that people pleasing is a behavior that all three of us can learn, right? It's why I learn it. So the work of identifying type can be really hard if we're only focused on the behavior. And so to identify type, we can take an online test, we can read books, we can go to a training. All of those things are a really great start, but all they're doing is sort of scratching at the surface, getting me deeper and deeper and deeper to my why. So it takes some sort of self-reflection to get all the way there, to filter between, is this my what or is this my why, right? And that's what the Enneagram is meant to do, is be this sort of spiritual and psychological behavioral tool for me to sort of create more support for the whys in my life, so I can sort of be more full, more whole, more in line with like who I want to be, not just necessarily how I was conditioned. So I think one of my favorite parts of my work is I offer typing interviews where I hold the space of all of the whys and can sort of move people through more quickly to a framework that might tell a clear story. So in about an hour, we can unpack dominant type, dominant instinct, wing, and the ways you use the Enneagram, sort of create a map out of it. And that's been part of the, you know, past 11 years of my training and my certification has been to be able to do this typing process. So you can take the quick route for those people who are impatient, or you can do the self-discovery and listen to podcasts and read books and join webinars. All of those things are good too. So.
Well, I think that you brought up like something that I struggled with when I first was introduced to the Enneagram, which was you're phrasing it a certain way, but like there was a number I wanted to be. And then there was who I really was. So like I was doing everything I could to identify in like twist it into a way that I fell into the number that I really identified with and I wanted to be. And then there was the actual number I was, which I kind of looked at with disdain and hate. Like, I don't like any of those qualities. That's not who I want to be. I'm throwing that out. And can I just, I want to be this other one. And I think that you phrased it really eloquently with the, of course you can mold your behaviors and all of your, and you can adapt to your environment, but it's really the why that's behind it. And often that's like a hard truth.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And it's so unconscious, right? This is where psychology fits in. So if we think about behavioral conditioning, right? We drive to work every day. We drive to the gym every day. We go somewhere every day. Eventually our brain goes, oh, this is familiar. I'm going to turn off my sort of conscious mind and I'm going to go to sleep a little bit and reserve some resources. And then we get to these places and we're like, I don't actually remember driving here. Like, I don't remember the turns, right? And we do this with our sort of, you know, relational behaviors with other humans. So for all of us to go, oh, all of a sudden I want to notice my why, it can feel really hard because it sits in this sort of subconscious deep conditioning that we've been doing since we were kids. So most people get really frustrated by the fact that, like, oh, I don't know myself. There must be something wrong with me. I'm like, no, you're human. Your yes. body has been doing what it's intended to do and protecting you and reserving resources. And it's like, it got really good at these things and sort of went to sleep to them. So that's why the process, I think, should be gentle, because it can be hard for folks to name and then accept these truths, right?
Mm-hmm. And I love that you brought up, you know, about growth and having, you know, a certain type, but that can present itself like differently as we like move along. And I think that can be particularly hard for people when we talk about the stories we tell ourselves anyway. But as a person who has had long, like, relationships with people, this is my sister, so people, and they can remember you or see you in a light of when maybe 5-10 years ago, and you have really like evolved and adapted since then. And you don't necessarily identify with some of those traits, because like we can work on things and actually like change some of those behaviors. So I just think it's interesting how we can like identify some core things, but then like grow and evolve with it.
Sure. And as we continue to grow and evolve, our work is to not really look like any type at all, right? Like, So we learn an Enneagram type, but in childhood out of restriction, out of, you know, hey, make ourselves more comfortable, make the people around us more comfortable. Personality is a construct around security, right? But as kiddos, we're these like messy conglomerates of all of these gifts. And so the more we heal, the more we grow, we should look, work, I fixate at seven. I should look less like a seven and more like all of these other types. And so that's my conscious healing, is how do I learn these other gifts? And the way the Enneagram is set up, all of these lines and movements show me what I tether to more easily. So it gives me sort of a map of where to start as I sort of flow and move and heal.
Yeah. And that when you tether to more easily, like you see you really fall off when it comes to like a nine, it's like your lowest, you know, that's like one of those that you really have to like kind of work on some of those traits.
Yeah, totally.
I'm working on it. I can see you're looking. I have no nine traits. I'm working on it.
There's a few that are a far cry for me that I know are like, I'm gonna get there. It just may be when I'm like 80, but I'm gonna get there.
I have goals.
You gotta have goals. So we've talked about being self-aware being one of the most important traits to contribute to success. How can the Enneagram help us become more self-aware?
Oh yeah, that's a really great question. And I'm going to liken it probably to a part of the world that you're both really good at, right? And that's like body work and sort of getting to know the aspects of wellness in terms of the container of right life, right? Like ourself and our healing and our body liberation and all those things that are really important. And we approach the work of body health in a really sort of systemic way, right? We're very conditioned to understand that if I want to all of a sudden learn to walk a 5K or run a marathon, that I have to take these small, steady steps forward. But we don't necessarily approach ego development, which is what the Enneagram helps with, in the same sort of way. And that's where I love interchanging consciousness practices and behavior change theory with the Enneagram, because it sort of slows it down and makes it smaller. If I want to run a marathon, so to speak, in terms of my ego development, right? I want to be like all of these types. I have to make it small enough that I can experience these sort of permanent shifts. And so instead, I think what we do is a lot of like consuming this podcast or listening to a TED talk or attending a training or go to therapy or go to coaching or do something, right? We're sort of consuming, but we're not integrating it into the body. And so the Enneagram allows me to name what I do and then work to integrate it into my body, into my biology, into my knowing. So it lives in me just like the progression of, you know, this improved sense of strength within body work. And I think about it the same exact way, right? Like, we don't work out the same muscle every day and expect it to get stronger. We have to rest and allow it to recover and repair. And so our working out with ego development is like rubbing up against people in life, right? Like, we have to be in community. And sometimes I go too far. Sometimes I hurt my feelings. Sometimes I hurt someone else's feelings. And I have to know how I recover and repair those tender parts of me so I get stronger, more resilient to go do it again. So I think this gives a really great framework for us to sort of live the experience of ego development instead of just like consuming it.
Mm, I love that. I think that is so true, that we are taking in so many things like during the day of, you know, how to be better. Mm. And but there's not so many actionable tips, you know, like I know what I want to be in the end, but like, I don't know how to take that first step. And I think that analogy that you used with how to train for a marathon, like, that is a great analogy. And I think that sounds really hopeful, because sometimes it's overwhelming that like working on your self-development is like, oh my God, I'm never going to get there.
Well, when you have those like setbacks, I think I've sat with this sometimes, when you have those setbacks where you know you've gone too far, you hurt someone's feelings, and then you're like, oh,
you didn't say you hurt your own feelings because you're an eight.
Yeah.
You hurt someone else's feelings again.
And I'm like, oh man, I'm failing at that. But like, when you reflect on some of those things and knowing like you're going to go too far sometimes, and just hearing it and reflecting and saying like, okay, like, how can I do that better next time? Or for me, like, how can I repair that relationship in a way that doesn't make that person feel bold?
Here comes the bold.
But like, it's that like noticing like you are going to make those mistakes when you're rubbing, like when you're interacting with people and you're meeting new people and they have a different, you know, personality style and communication style. And it's going to like, I always say like upset my demons, but like, I don't know, that's probably not the right term, but like, I always say like that person irritates my demons. Right. And I like notice that it's like me being irritated for that with them with like no real reason. I just like know it's bringing something to the surface for me, and then trying to like reflect on that and like how I can better like interact with that person.
You got it. You got it. And that's where all of a sudden all of these tools and skills add, right? That sort of allow me to strengthen what I know so that I can get back out in the arena and I can try again, right? And so whatever that might look like is different for each of us, dependent on where we sort of fixate on the Enneagram. So as a 7, I need something different than you need, Kelsey, as an 8. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. There is this no sort of one size fits all way. I really like to think about like this sort of self-care, self-knowing work, like trying on clothes. Like, we have to be willing to try a bunch of stuff on. We have to be willing to put the stuff back that doesn't work for us. Like, I'm never going to be the type of person that journals. Like, that's not me. But I can take the concept of journaling and self-expression and find another way to do it, right? That is actually accessible to my 7 energy, right?
Yeah. Stop trying to force it.
I love that. Yeah. Cause all the time we're like, we'll do this thing. And you're like, that does not work for me.
I tried
to do that thing and that doesn't work for my energy.
we feel like we're failing, right? Mm-hmm. There's no motivation in that.
So one of the things that I noticed that was really interesting about your Instagram is that there is a clear message that there is an kind of a not way to use. Don't use the Enneagram this way, because you're not doing yourself any favors. How should we not be using the Enneagram?
Yeah, so I'm a little preachy when it comes to the limiting qualities that can happen when we create a rigid experience with the Enneagram, right? Like, we don't live in a binary. We are not either or of anything.
Did you hear that?
I struggle.
We're not an either or. I love anything.
Erin, tell me more.
I mean, welcome to the human condition, right? Like that we're sort of systemically conditioned to put things in good or bad, right or wrong, right? And the Enneagram is actually our pathway to break up with all of that, right? It's a bad relationship that it is time to break up with. And so I really, the Enneagram is meant to be a tool for liberation. It is meant to be a tool for wholeness and self-discovery and connectivity and sort of integration, like coming into myself, like coming home. Yet when we sort of filter it all the way down and say, as a seven, I only go here in stress and I only go here in health and sevens only look like these things, like sevens can't be introverted. Of course, they're only extroverted. Then all of a sudden we're creating this binary experience where I don't belong, right? And that's the antithesis of the Enneagram, which is to help promote belonging, right? Belonging of self. And so I get to be an introverted, nerdy, not very spontaneous type seven because the way I use it looks really, really unique because it takes in my level of consciousness. It takes in my wings and my subtypes and how I move. When I first discovered the Enneagram, I thought it was a three. I desperately wanted to be a three, to go back to what you were saying, Rachel, about type.
Please.
When I took an online test, I tested as a two. And it's because of my social instinct of my seven creates this desire to belong, which looks like from a testing construct that I care about people pleasing. But we're missing the why component again. Why do I people please as a seven? And so I just get really hot around people who want to limit because that could be my seven worldview, right? Please don't limit me. Don't put me in a cage. But I feel really, really passionate about it as a tool to help us unbox and to really sort of get wild and break rules so that we can be more authentically who we're always intended to be. So anytime someone's saying this is the rule of the Enneagram, I'm usually like, and no.
Yeah. Yes. And I think sometimes we create those rules for ourselves too, right? Like I know as an eight, when I am stressed, I go like I isolate. Like I know that like I will, and then I just use it kind of as an excuse to isolate. And then I'm like, no, that's not what we're working on. We're working on talking about our feelings. So then I'm trying to do the opposite of that, where I'm like, okay, who's a safe person to reach out to? There's like a list of one. My mom. No, but like, I think that sometimes when we have those rules in that box of like under stress, this is what I do. And then it's more of an excuse to do that thing instead of.
And like self-fulfilling prophecy anyways.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because you already have it working in your mind instead of like, okay, maybe that is what I've done in the past in a stressful situation when I'm under stress, but like, what is something that I could maybe do different this time? How could I grow in this moment of stress is something that I think that like is just worth like thinking about when we use the Enneagram.
Yeah. And the part of it that sort of gets lost when we only sort of talk about things one-sided is it's the other side is our teacher, right? So as a seven who finds myself regularly inhabiting the type one, the sort of rigid, binary, critical, sometimes naggy, my husband will say, like parts of life, the way in which I soften that and breathe room in it is the high side of the type one. Like escaping it doesn't teach me anything. But if I can embody what's healthy about the one, which is what is ethical and moral. Ethical and moral might be treating my husband a little nicer, right? Like, or, you know, what is good.
Are you serious? Is that really the one? Is that what we have to do?
I don't know if I can get on that road with you, Erin. Yeah. I struggle there.
I mean, same. And it's also where I have to push in and learn. So yeah, we want to, you know, to use your example, Kelsey, about isolation, right? We sort of think about isolation as an escape and that the only way that I heal is to re-engage. But actually, isolation can be healing if it's out of choice and out of consciousness and not out of stonewalling or avoidance, but out of self-care and plugging my battery back in. So it's really honoring both sides of the gifts of a type as a way to build those skills.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So can we talk a little bit? So is there a way we can use our knowledge of the Enneagram to positively impact changes in habits that we're trying to implement?
Absolutely. Because all of what we know is behavior. And as it gets ingrained over time, like sort of goes into that subconscious, it becomes this sleepy habit that we don't necessarily notice, right? And so the beautiful part about the way we're wired is we can change, we can shift. You can teach old dogs new tricks, right? Like we can learn new things. We just have to learn it in a present mind, right? So I have to be willing to come into consciousness, come into a present mind so that I can pay attention and then make conscious choice to sort of learn and soften and change the behavior. Someone told me once that big doors get opened by small hinges. And these little tiny shifts that we can make are the small hinges, right, that allow me, if I'm trying to get from point A to point Z, right, deciding to run a marathon and actually running a marathon, it's these little pivots, these little steps, this running a mile, running 2 miles, running 3 miles that get me all the way there. And that's how we sort of shift habit, is to say, wow, I would really like to not be so stressed about the state of my house, right? Like it's sort of cluttered and messy when my husband and my kids are in charge. And my habit would be to maybe come out and start, hey guys, I need you to clean up, and be sort of only worried about that. So I can't change that end result, but I can approach my door from my office, take a few deep breaths, get into presence and open the door and say more consciously, hey guys, a messy house stresses mom out. Could we all clean up together, right? So it allows me to just be in my truth and ask people with some grace to be in my truth with me, right? So whatever the habit is, there's a chance to resource it, but it requires that sort of conscious knowing first.
Mm-hmm. So the key to life is to be present. This is, I keep coming back to this and I'm like, but like, can I just plow through? Are you sure? So with regards to health of our body and our relationship with food and our relationship with our body, because this is something that as women, we see a lot of our listeners have struggles in these areas. Can we use the Enneagram to kind of, and again, these are, a lot of these are habitual. People have these kind of habitual behaviors that are negatively impacting their relationship with their body or their ability to consume food that makes them feel great. How can we use the Enneagram to heal these areas? And can we?
Yes, that's a really, really great question. I had this conversation this week actually, because we understand that by naming our patterns, right? And that's what the Enneagram allows me to do, is the starting practice of naming my patterns, right? So I fixate at 7 and it allows me to go, oh, wow, I do really want to control the outcome of everything, right? And I actually think that I have control, and I use planning and forward motion as a way to own my reality. And the naming of that allows me to build some muscles around my self-awareness so that I can start to learn to name how that might intersect with parts of my identity, like my relationship with food, like my relationship with my body, right? So it helped me to illuminate, wow, I really like to control my reality. I really like to control my environment. And that allows me to feel like I can be happy and find the opportunity. I can be in my 7. Oh, I also really like to control food. Food as a way to be happy, right? And so because I could name it, I could start to do the things that I needed to do. For me, it was major intuitive eating work to start breaking up with some of the patterns around feeling like I could actually control the things in me that felt out of control by food, right? And that also happened to me around my weight. It's happened to me around how I feel in my body, what beauty industry has sort of told me. And by being able to name my pattern, I can show up in conscious choice and say, do I actually want to wear makeup every day? No, I don't actually want to wear makeup every day, right? Like, I can start making these choices of who I want to be versus what are all the messaging that I'm getting. And this is hard work, right? You know this. It's really hard work because not only am I battling my conditioning, my personality, the things that make me safe, but I'm also battling constructs of societal pressure, right? All of these different systems that say, hey, be like this and you're okay. And so it does take inside out work to be able to battle it for me and then be able to hold strong in the face of all of that conditioning.
Yeah. I love the way you put that, because sometimes when we're trying to figure that out, I'm someone who like goes against whatever someone's telling me to do. Like, my initial like knee jerk reaction is like, nope, like, I'm going to do the opposite of what you just said. So as part of that, like learning or unlearning is like, do I not want to do this thing because I don't want to do it or because society told me to do it? Like, it kind of gets in this like gray area where you're like, I'm not sure. Let me think on that. Like, you know, and I feel like that might be a common experience for other women. Like, what is it that I actually want? And what am I actually feeling for like my truth? And then what am I just like going against? What has been programmed into me with the society that I live in, and kind of sifting through all of that is like messy work and not something that happens, definitely not overnight, like years of like trying to sift through that stuff.
It totally is. And this is a framework the Enneagram has taught me, but also I have a neurodivergent child, and trauma-informed parenting also teaches this, right? Where it's really about intuition building. It's really about body regulation and getting into the body. And what happens for us, especially through the constructs of personality and behavior, and then you get like, you know, performance-driven culture and perfectionism and all of these sort of rigid ways of thinking, that I sort of override my intuition and I just get into cognition. What is fact? What does data tell me? What is the right way to be? And so all of our work is to sort of get back down into the body, get back down into intuition, into our knowing, regulating our body so that I can get in tune with how does it make me feel, right? Is it in alignment with my values and my morals? Is it in alignment with connection and relationship and love and how, who I want to be? And then I make choice, right? But we're sort of forced to go from the top down, this consciousness down, and override intuition. And so the Enneagram has helped me go, okay, body, heart, mind work is essential to my knowing. And then trauma-informed parenting gave me some tips to get back into my body. And I was like, oh, this is doable, right? I think it sort of framed something that I learned from John Gottman, who's a relationship researcher, and he talks about the success of relationships. And he could predict with almost a 94% accuracy when a relationship was going to fail. And the tenets that he talks about aren't that they are healthy because they don't experience conflict. They are healthy because they understand how to pivot out of conflict. And that's sort of what intuition teaches us, is what does it look like for me to recover and repair? How do I get back into the arena? How do I get back into sort of rubbing up against life in a way that honors me? And I hold my intuition, I hold my regulation as I move into it. So the more I learn about the Enneagram, the more I realize it sort of pulls in all of these other tools as a way to teach me to live, as a way to teach me to be.
Oh man, I just think, and I know it's not only a societal women, you know, issue and a patriarchy, but I really do think that the trusting of yourself above all others is something that so many women struggle with. I think that there are so many things that point to look at outside sources to tell you who you are, how you feel. And it's a really unfulfilling feeling because it's so difficult to find truth when it's not coming from within. It's so difficult, and it makes the all of the noise that's coming in so loud. And it makes, I don't know, it makes me feel as if like I don't have any good direction, that there's so much knowledge that I can't possibly take it all in. And I can't ever really find the truth. And it's actually right here.
Yeah.
Right here. It's been here. And taking that into what I eat, taking that into how I feel about my body, how I parent, and all of my relationships, and just me as a human being, taking that and saying like, no, I know, actually, I know. Don't tell me I need to go on keto. Don't tell me I need to wear, you know, palazzo pants. Don't tell me I need to wear fake eyelashes. I know who I am, and I know who I want to be. I just think that that is some of the most difficult work.
Yeah.
It's so difficult.
The work is to recognize that it's not a finish line, right? Like, I'm never going to always hold, oh, I'm good. I know, right? We're going to get lost again. And so our work, just like the muscles, is to recover and repair. All right, I got lost. Now it's time to get found again and get back in here, right? Until I get lost again. And when we can sort of hold the fact that it's cyclical and not linear, we realize that we just get stronger and stronger and stronger. And now all of a sudden I'm running a marathon, same effort, but man, I bounce back a lot faster.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
That's the goal right there. And I think sometimes, you know, when, you know, we talk to a lot of women and talking about like, as we talk to you, like, I'm not at any finish line. You're not at any finish line. Like,
well, I'm the one, so I've created a finish line.
We don't have it, like, figured out, you know?
I've created one, and I'm desperately trying to crawl to perfection.
To perfection that doesn't exist.
I know.
But there's just always going to be these setbacks and these new experiences where you feel like you've had a setback, but it's a learning experience. I have a silver lining. I had a pretty high 7 too. So like I ride the like silver lining to everything, but like that those setbacks are always going to happen and they're normal and they're part of this whole process because like you don't get to a space where you're like, okay, I am in love or I'm even comfortable with my body or I'm comfortable with how fit I am or I'm comfortable with what a good mother or sister or parent that I am, because I have days where I feel like I'm not a good parent or like I feel like I am like really struggling with my body image or, yep, you know, all of these things that every one of us are still having days where we're struggling with those things. And that is so normal.
Yeah, totally. And whether it's a setback or whether it's a leap forward, right? Like, I'm evolving and all of a sudden I recognize like I feel really liberated in my body and I understand, you know, that there is health at every size and I can love the shape and size of the body that I have now. And then I recognize I'm out here and I feel really lonely and the people in my life don't think these same things and my friendships shift and change. And so then I can feel really tender in my growth too. And so it's another reminder to get back into my tools and to know myself and know my type helps me know my tenderness and what I need to sort of reassure myself and go, you got to keep trudging along, right? Like this is good work too.
This is good work.
Mm-hmm.
It's good work.
It is.
And we got to do it. Erin, I think that this has been just so incredibly mind-blowing and just extremely helpful for just anybody who is like a person on earth and is like, you know what, I'm here. And where can our listeners hear more from you and hear more about your work?
Thank you. I'm on Instagram at Living the Enneagram, which is a space in which I really want to be a place for folks to come practice this art of living and our knowing and being reminders to sort of get back into ourselves. And I use the Enneagram in consciousness practice and trauma-informed parenting and behavior change, all to sort of help in that way. If you don't know your type or struggling to identify with type, I have a YouTube channel, same Living the Enneagram, where I have panels that you can watch of every Enneagram type and all of the instincts. So when we look at the Enneagram, we have 9 types, but there's actually 27 subtypes. So it can get really hard to figure out where I sit. So these panels are meant to be more accessible way to sort of pay attention to, oh yeah, I resonate with this person. So those are really great ways to sort of consume some information and learn a little bit more about how I use the Enneagram as a tool to sort of live our best selves.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll put some of the ways to reach you in our show notes at the end of this, guys. So if you kind of need a link to get to her YouTube, we'll put it in there so that you can figure out where you are on the Enneagram and how you can use that information to empower your life.
Really? Let's go. Let's freaking go. That's what I'm here for. I'm here for that shit.
All right, Erin, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Rachel and Kelsey. It was so nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. If you'd like to join our movement, head over to the Facebook group and take part in our free weekly workouts for a chance to win some badass gear. Search Fitness Programming by CVG on Facebook. We're in there every day. It's a perfect place to get in touch with us. This podcast is made possible by Constantly Varied Gear, so be sure to check out constantlyvariedgear.com. See you next week. Crush your goals.